Scott A. We're back with another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. He's Scott Manzi. I'm Alex Turco. As always, we are providing the freshest of content as we sit here and drink a couple beers to break down your favorite sports. And
dude, it's Thanksgiving week.
It's Thanksgiving week.
Normally, we're cracking our first beer when we start this show. I'm not going to say the exact number of what beer we're cracking at the start of this episode, but it's not number one, I can tell you that.
No, it's not number two either. We can tell you that also. But you know what? Like you said, it's Thanksgiving week. We got a lot to look forward to. We got a lot of weight to put on. Got a lot of food to eat. A lot more beers to drink. There's more where that came from.
Heck yeah. Man, what a great week. I mean, we're in a great part of the year. We rolled from October, where we highlighted how great of a sports month
Loved it.
We're rolling into late November now. Late Thanksgiving this year, but it's well worth the wait. We're in the full swing of NBA, college basketball started. We're at the tail end of college football season, rivalry week, and we've got a special coming up with that later on in the week as
yes,
well.
Oh, yes, we do.
Oh, I'm excited to debut that, a two-episode week, if you will, because we've got an in-depth feature looking at rivalry weekend in college football. And, of course, we're right into the heart of the second half of the NFL season. We're going to get in a lot of that here tonight.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's five games left. But, Scott, we're talking about eating, putting on weight, drinking beers, a couple things I'm really, really good at. You know who else is good at eating I just found out about?
Who's that?
The OG Papa John. Before he lost Papa John's, he just had an interview that came out the other day. He said he has now eaten 40 pizzas in the last 30 days as he's on this quest to prove that Papa John's ingredients have been slacking or slipping under new ownership since he's been fired. So
it's in the family too. So I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah,
he's calling out your second cousin.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad blood. I guess I'm ordering Domino's, right? But no, Papa John certainly has been putting on a clinic on some pizzas, apparently. You know what else has been?
I have to just say, for those that haven't seen the video, search it on Twitter. A great supercut. At Bubba Prague, he's Timothy Burke, former Deadspin employee, B-U-B-B-A-P-R-O-G. And he just took a bunch of quotes out of context of this interview, and it is hysterical.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days. Livy currently and Mark Shapiro should be in jail. He has no pizza experience. He's never been in the pizza category. I would just say, stay tuned. The day of reckoning will come. The record will be straight.
Why not set the record straight now? I mean, what is it about the record that's not straight?
Stay tuned.
I actually, before I move off this, because I have another little fun opener I want to get to, but how is Papa John, or what's his last name?
John Shatner.
How is he so damn sweaty? He looks like he's been...
Because he ate 40 pizzas in 30 days. Wouldn't you
true.
Be sweaty if you
You're right.
You did
I feel
that?
Like he's drinking the garlic butter they give you.
Oh, he definitely is.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, I am. I can only imagine what he's doing if he's trying to down 40 of them. But, Scott, another fun topic around this, touching in the sports world a little bit, my boy, quack, quack, Delvin Duck Hodges.
Devlin,
I meant.
Yes.
Sorry, that's the beer chiming in. Devlin Duck Hodges, who we've touched on multiple episodes now because I've been screaming for him as opposed to Mason Rudolph for the Steelers, gets the nod for the Steelers. That's a fun fact for you. Another fun fact for you, PETA, if you're a Georgia Bulldogs
Goodness
fan.
Goodness gracious.
PETA decided to get offended about, well, I won't even say that. Decided to bring up the fact that UGA 10 for the Georgia Bulldogs is being treated, let's see, I have to find it, but they say he looks, quote, miserable, and that it's a shame that any dog is crated and traveled around from place to place. And it's like, this guy lives in a castle and gets fed like steaks, literally.
Number one, PETA is always offended, so it's just what are they offended about
lately? I thought you were going to be offended by me saying they get offended.
No.
I feel better
I'm offended
now.
By how offended PETA is all the time.
It's offensive.
It's offensive how offended they are. But PETA offended, again, shocker. Number two, of course he looked miserable. It was raining outside. I guarantee nobody was sitting there talking about all the humans that were there and how they should have been in a loving family home that day instead of being out in the rain. And number three, guess what? if he is a pet instead of a mascot, he's still getting crated up and carted around all over the place. So I don't want to hear, it's not like he's roaming free in the meadows of the of Oklahoma. You know, most pets are in, I don't know, less than free situations.
I'll tell you, my dog right now, when I come home, he's excited to see me for 5 minutes, and then all he does is lay there and look the same that Ugga did
also
in the corner in his little bed, just
English
like
bulldogs kind of look miserable all the time. They have resting bitch face. That's kind of what it is,
because they look like they've eaten about 40 pizzas in 30 days.
And with that, maybe we should actually get into the sports content.
Yeah, I forgot that
on
we
this
were,
podcast
I,
yeah believe
I
it or not
this mic was here.
Yeah, the Sports Bar Pod, known as a sports podcast. Sometimes
The Sports Bar Podcast touches on sports, and that's what I'm going to do right now, staying with the Georgia Bulldogs. We just had the college football top four come out for the college football playoff. Most of our listeners now know we record on Monday nights and post on Tuesdays. This week, Scott again had a traveling arrangement for the JU.
All these Monday night games, man.
The
it's
JU
really messing with us.
Basketball team had a game on Monday night. So here we are on Tuesday night watching a little action, and it does give us the opportunity to see the top four for the college football playoff and see those full rankings come out. Scott, Georgia leads our countdown from four to top four to one, Georgia being number four, that is. Clemson at three, undefeated. LSU undefeated at number two. And then Ohio State with the shakeup, reclaiming the number one spot.
Well, you and I were sitting on the couch together when this came out, and you immediately started laughing and said, "See, I told you, this is just for ratings." And certainly what Ohio State did this past week was impressive in the fact that they beat a good Penn State team. I don't think anybody, Penn State, remember, at the very first rankings of the college football playoff was number four. This committee thinks very highly of this Penn State team. So for Ohio State to beat them should, you would think, give them some sort of a boost. Did I think it would give them a boost to push them up to number one this week? No, but I will say I'll give the committee credit, because they have been somewhat transparent from the very get-go in the fact that they said, listen, this is a week-in, week-out system. And what we are just trying to do is, instead of just saying, well, they didn't lose, so they're not going to go anywhere. They have, since the very first year of this system, fluctuated these rankings week in and week out, regardless of whether or not a team lost. And here's another example of it this week with LSU falling and Ohio State reclaiming the number one spot that they held to start the college football playoff rankings. Do I agree with it 100%? No. Do I understand it? Yes. And it's one of those things where it kind of sets up perfectly for if LSU comes back in 2 weeks and wins the SEC title game to potentially re-jump Ohio State, depending on who Ohio State plays in that final game. And guess what? I mean, if LSU is going to play Georgia, and regardless of who Ohio State plays in the Big Ten title game, that Georgia win, if LSU gets it, is going to look better than that Big Ten win.
No doubt. No doubt.
And that should, I would imagine, springboard LSU into that number one spot again in 2 weeks if everything holds serve at this point.
I told you so, man. This is such a four ratings show. And I know you're saying week in, week out, they're sticking to the formula. Yeah, they are, and that's okay. But why is LSU being punished is my question. I get that the Ohio State win over Penn State is a better win quality-wise than LSU stomping Arkansas like they're supposed to. But why are they being penalized? They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't have a squeaker where they squeaked by Arkansas. So why are they moving to number two? They didn't look any better or worse than they did 2 weeks ago. That's my thing with it.
That point, shouldn't Clemson be number one then, if it's all about just not penalizing teams for not losing?
Well, you know I've been on that bandwagon from the start, and it's not a sense of Clemson being looking better so far, but who has unseated them? They're the reigning champs.
See, I think what I do like about what has changed since the college football playoff has started is that it's not about punishing teams as it is about rewarding teams. And this, in my opinion, is more of rewarding Ohio State for a good win than it is for punishing LSU for just taking care of their business for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And they have consistently rewarded teams for good wins, which is why these teams are scheduling better now than they ever did, more challenging out-of-conference
yeah.
games, because they understand
well it means
the
more.
Bump. The bump is huge if you get that win over the team that you can sit there and hang that pelt on the wall at the end of the day and point to it and saying, look, there are a couple of teams that are sitting right on the outside and looking in right now that could get themselves into the conversation here when it's all said and done if they collect a few more of those pelts, and they will have the opportunity. And yeah, I'm talking about Baylor, and I'm talking about Minnesota most specifically. Even you can even say Georgia in that regard, in the fact that I know they're sitting four right now, but it feels like a lot of guys are scratching and clawing at them.
Well, I mean,
Alabama's
right on their heels, but they don't even have the opportunity to play for a conference championship.
That's it. And all these other teams we just talked about, Georgia, Minnesota, Baylor, Utah, even haven't brought them up yet, but those are all teams with an opportunity to get one more, at least one more, signature win at the end of the season. And you know who has zero opportunity outside of this Saturday to get a signature win? And while it'd be a nice win for Alabama if they beat Auburn, certainly, because they're a top 15 team in the CFP playoffs right now, that'd be the third loss for Auburn, right? Or fourth loss for Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn's now lost to Florida. They lost to LSU, and that would be their third loss, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of other teams with opportunities for better wins than that Auburn win, which unquestionably will be Alabama's best win of the entire season. And not qualifying, it didn't cost them 2 years ago, but not qualifying for the SEC Championship game this year.
Yeah.
Could
well,
end
it has
up
to
costing
mean something them. When the teams behind them have the potential. Of course, things need to play out appropriately, but assuming that Baylor and Minnesota went out and Utah wins out, Bama's got to go to the back seat. We have a really, really big debate on our hands that might come up, you know, and it's not there yet, so the hypotheticals are what make this so much fun. I will say the top three being Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, that's the right top three.
No doubt.
Now, if we're going to sit here and jumble the order, so be it. That's what makes it fun, discussing it. And I don't think Clemson's the best team in the country this year, but I do prefer teams not being penalized based on other teams looking better. I mean,
I feel like this is still a slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope.
It is, but it does feel like maybe this extends a little bit from that 2014 season where Florida State was the
it
one
definitely
getting
does,
penalized.
But I have to stay consistent.
Yeah,
that
I
is can't
very
get
true.
Off that horse now.
Speaking
that's the
of
truth.
Consistent, death taxes in the Corona Christmas commercial. How long have they been running this one with the lighting up of the Christmas trees? I believe that is a tweet.
8 to 10 years
yeah.
now. No, I mean it. I mean, they were running that back when I was in high school, and it's a great commercial, though.
It's consistent. Why change it? I believe I stole that. I think I stole that from our friend Bods, who will, by the way, be joining us on this upcoming special edition episode of the Sports Bar Podcast, looking at Rivalry Weekend to help us break down the glut of good games over the course of this final weekend in the month of November. I believe he tweeted that a year or so. It might have been 3 or 4 years
Death
ago.
Death taxes Corona commercial
yeah,
for Christmas.
Corona Christmas tree commercial.
Well, Scott, while you're pimping out our Rivalry
yes.
Week. Ah, you got me.
You can't say it. Nah.
I did.
Yes.
I got it on round two.
Yeah,
Rivalry Week.
It's tough. It's tough.
It is tough. There's no debating that. But while you're pimping it out, I do want to say, listen, we love our listeners here, and we love the feedback we've gotten. But guess what? We love you so much. We have a full breakdown of college football coming up for you, and it is extensive. It covers every single game of Rivalry Week. I had to slow it down midstream.
You just got to open up your mouth a little.
You really do.
Rivalry Week.
And on Thanksgiving, everyone gets a little tired of their family or has to travel to and from their family's house. This is a perfect podcast to get you through it, and we're going to break it down for you by the games. 12 o'clock, the 3:30s, the 7:30, the 8 p.m.s. I mean, all in order, so all you got to do is go in order from the games Thursday to Friday to Saturday. Tons of college football, tons of implications. So tune into that. We'll be releasing that, what, on Thursday?
Thursday morning. Yeah, Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
So after you've watched 5 minutes of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade to say you did it, and then you're bored, then you can turn that on while your family's cooking and you're not.
Watch the Macy's Parade on mute and listen to our podcast.
It is, by the way, great on mute, because if you listen to more of the 5 minutes of that with the sound, it's unbearable.
Yeah.
But I do like looking at the floats.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And what
something
else?
To catch your eye.
It's something
like
on Thanksgiving morning. It's one of those weird traditions, right? Like, I do it every time, and then I look at it, I'm like, why did I do this? I'm not exactly entertained by this per se, but like I feel like I have to, because I feel like it's part of the tradition of the holiday, if you will.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We're also sitting at a home that already has a Christmas tree up in the corner, and I put up my Christmas stuff today as well, minus the tree. Don't have a tree yet, but I've
got... I don't know what it is, but this year we got started on it really early.
Well, it's also late Thanksgiving. Remember that. I mean, here we are recording this on the 26th.
Well, I mean, December's this weekend.
I mean, we're recording on the 26th, and we're still 2 days away from Thanksgiving. I mean, this is super late Thanksgiving this year.
You're right. So, Scott, we did a ton of college football on that special, so I don't want to dive too deep into it, because I want our listeners to go download that podcast, rate, review, subscribe, the things we always ask for, but most of all, listen, enjoy, and give us some feedback. But before I let us get off the college football topic, I am going to force you to continue to ring the bells of the Turco trifecta, because I am on a crazy hot streak, Scott. I'm hotter than hot, man.
The Turco trifecta for the third consecutive week, 3-0.
Say that one more time.
The Turco trifecta for the third consecutive week, 3-0.
That's right. And I was catching a lot of heat. It's funny, I haven't caught that much praise. Isn't that weird how that happens?
Wow, yeah.
I was getting more texts than you'd ever believe, which was nice because it assured me that we had listeners. You see the number of how many people listen, but then when you see someone comment on something you say,
it makes it real.
You're like, oh, okay, you listened to me, and you're calling me an idiot.
But by the way, your weekend this weekend allowed you to move over 500 for the first time since, I think, the opening week.
I was never worried, Scott. You guys panicked. I didn't. And that's the key with the Turco trifecta.
You're now 19-17 on the season after correctly picking Texas A&M to cover the 13.5-point spread at Georgia, Illinois to cover the 15.5 spread at Iowa, and Minnesota, they were 13.5-point favorites at Northwestern, and they covered that as well.
That's that is right, and they squeaked that one out a little bit and made me nervous just spread-wise there. Minnesota gave the ball up late to Northwestern. Northwestern was trying to ruin my perfect record.
Well, luckily for you, Northwestern has set offensive football back maybe a century this year.
One of my favorite teams to bet against. Love betting against them, and I love betting against Iowa not being able to cover a spread because they can't score. But that is neither here nor there when it comes to this week's correct picks. I have a list of 7 games in front of me that I really like, and I'm having trouble picking 3. So I'm gonna give you 3 out of this.
Okay.
And I've really weighed my options. The first one to me is a no-brainer. Okay, this is my favorite game of the week. Notre Dame giving 14.5 at Stanford. Their California trip here will be rewarded. They're gonna stomp the Cardinal. Almost call them the Cardinals. But the Stanford Cardinal
Go Tree
are really having a tough year. I like David Shaw as their coach, but they're Notre Dame, the opponent they have this week, and the opponent they're hosting, rather, has been on an extreme hot streak since struggling against Michigan in a horrid downpour. So I have Notre Dame and the Irish covering after giving the 14.5 points. Texas Tech, my second pick here.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting 10 points at Texas to end the season, and I know that's on the road, but guess what? It's a noon game, and everyone in Longhorn Nation is disappointed in Tom Herman and the rest of the Longhorn team, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't know who wins this game per se. Texas hasn't impressed me. I'd be interested in a money line upset here, but I will say I'm going to take the 10 points, Texas Tech traveling to Texas. Then my final game on the schedule here, I have Alabama in the Iron Bowl, giving 3.5 points at Auburn. This was a very interesting pick for me. Main reason being, Auburn's defense is awesome. And we definitely touched on that in the special coming up here, breaking down all of the top games of the weekend. But the reason I think the Tide prevail is because I think Bo Nix, as a freshman, is really going to struggle. I hate saying he stinks as a freshman, but, man, he stinks. Okay? He's a freshman. I'm not closing the book on him, but he stinks.
Well, you said it.
Yeah. No.
I hate to say it, but here I am.
That doesn't count. That doesn't count. That's saying I didn't say it.
Makes you wonder, like, would they have been better off
with Joey Gatewood?
At least finding a role for him?
Yeah. Letting him come in, run the ball a little. And I'm not saying he's strictly a runner, Joey Gatewood, that is. But, you know, that's a guy that had comparisons coming out of high school of Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And he just can't find the field there because Bo Nix Auburn is a legacy.
Legacy, yeah.
Might cost Gus Malzahn his job, by the way.
Well, it's not a college football season if Gus Malzahn's not coaching for his job at Auburn. Honestly, if an Auburn coach isn't coaching for his job, because there might be no more common hot seat in football than whoever's in charge of the Tigers down in the Plains.
Well, they just have the most finicky Boosters Association.
Yeah,
I mean, those guys are all sitting on
there ain't nothing,
pins and needles every
there's
game.
There's no such thing as patience down there and at Jordan-Hare. All right, so let's recap it here. Your Turco trifecta for the week. Notre Dame covering a 14.5-point spread at Stanford as favorites. Texas Tech as 10-point dogs at Texas. And then Bama, 3.5-point favorites at Auburn.
That's right. Those are hopefully a fourth consecutive 3-0 week picks.
Yeah.
I have a couple games, little specials here on the that we do touch on in the rivalry. I keep hyping it up because I think we really did give out a ton of information. And if you're one of those listeners that has been in contact with us about gambling or interested in the lines or just breaking down some of the oh, here's your Corona commercial again.
Dad, taxes, Corona Christmas commercial.
It gets me every time, though. It's awesome. It's so well done. Feliz Navidad. But the reason I bring that up as far as listening to that Rivalry Week podcast that's going to come out on Thursday is we do mention the line on each game. So this is my Turco trifecta.
Oh, but you're getting bonus.
Oh,
you're getting
Bod's
bonuses as well because right. You and him are frequent commenters on Twitter.com about the lines and things like that. He's got a whole formula that he's worked this year with great success And then little old me, who's not allowed to gamble on things due to my job, just chimes in a little bit as well. So if you're into that kind of stuff, there's a lot of good content coming up breaking down what these rivalry games look like.
And you know what? Clinging on to the college football season's all we were doing there.
We spent all summer talking about it, and here we are already at the end of it. Can you believe it?
I really can't. This has flown by. We started this as God, I can't wait for football to be back. Let's start a podcast thing because we just both were that excited. And now we're this deep into it. We have some listeners. We're having a lot of fun with it. But, God, there is so much that has happened in the season already. I mean, we don't even have the same head coach as Florida State fans as we did when we started doing this podcast. It's crazy.
No. There's a lot that has changed, some for the better, some for the worse. And speaking of changes, why don't we change directions and head to the NFL and the National Football League, in which we are not quite at the end, but we are on the back half of the season and are kind of getting a clearer picture when it comes to the playoffs as far as things are concerned. The NFC, we're not going to touch on that much today. We've hit on that a lot, except to mention on the official 49ers podcast of Jacksonville, Florida, Niners getting it done again
in dominating fashion.
We're going to ride this all the way to the end, aren't we?
Yeah. Oh, we have to.
Niners
we're huge
going to
Niners
the Super Bowl.
Guys.
I mean, if they don't go to the Super Bowl, then what do we have to root for?
Oh, we'll bring them up on how they were gypped, I think. If can
Niners make
the
Super Bowl, we're going live pod the day of the Super Bowl.
Oh, you shitting me? With the budget that we have for the Sports Bar podcast, we're flying there,
oh,
Scott.
Oh, yeah, okay. We're going to Miami. Well, we don't have to fly. We can drive.
No. We have that. That's what our budget looks like. We're flying, baby, and we are going to be on Radio Row.
Ooh. Okay. Big time.
Yeah.
There are not many. You know, you gotta be the real who's of the who in order to get on Radio Row at the Super Bowl, which is usually at some convention center / hotel that is a long way away from the stadium. But I don't know. Yeah, I'll update you on that. I know some connections. Maybe I can get somebody to
I'm happy
help
you
hook
brought
us
them up.
Up.
I was worried you won it. I am, before you say another thing about the NFL, next week, and we just talked last week about how good Lamar Jackson is and how improved he is, and they dismantled on Monday Night Football the formerly St. Louis Rams, the Los Angeles Rams, in absolutely abusive fashion. But we have a matchup for the ages next week. The defensive line of our beloved San Francisco 49ers against the electric Lamar Jackson next week. Unfortunately, a 1 o'clock game, which is just pitiful. Probably not going to be able to watch it. I'm going to be at the Jags game. But the Baltimore Ravens versus the San Francisco 49ers next week, or this upcoming Sunday, actually.
God bless your soul for going to TIA Bank Field for that game on Sunday, by the way.
I fell into some club tickets. And that,
all right,
you know,
well, that's not so bad.
Right, that was the only reason I did it. And it's not even like I like the, you know, when Jameis first went to Tampa Bay, I was excited to watch him there. Now it's like, I forgot I even liked him at a point.
Well, he's in a dimension of his own this year with his ability to be exciting, great, bad, all at the exact same time, seemingly.
We don't have time to break him down. He leads the NFL in 300-yard games, but also leads it in picks. So let's just leave it
all
there.
All you need to know.
Let's just
all
leave it.
You need to know about the Bruce Arians' latest project, Jameis Winston. Jameis Squinston, if you will. What about the AFC, though, and the playoff picture there? Because we're sitting here, and we kind of know some of the stuff. We know the Patriots are going to be there. We know the Ravens are going to be there, and it's probably going to come down to either one of them for the number one overall seed. And as far as some of these other division leaders, things are starting to shake out. Big win for Houston on Thursday Night Football this past week, and that gave them the driver's seat in the AFC South. Kansas City, with Mahomes back, still feels like they're the team to beat in the AFC West. Buffalo is the team that won't go away. They're 8-3 and the number one wild card team. And
they have the Cowboys this Thursday on
first
Thanksgiving
time
football.
Buffalo has been on Thursday Night Football Thanksgiving since the early 90s when Jim Kelly was playing for him. Apparently a very good, you know, if you're into these kind of things, you're going to have the TV on anyway. There's going to be a really good teaser for the game. And what I mean by the teaser, if you remember the AFC Championship game a couple of years ago when they did the whole John Malkovich and the Symphony Orchestra or whatever, when he was doing the David and Goliath spiel, which was unbelievable and maybe the greatest game teaser ever in the history of these things. I still get chills thinking about watching that one on a plane home that day getting ready for the AFC Championship game. But they did a whole piece on Jim Kelly and the adversity he's overcome, just both as a quarterback in Buffalo, the cancer diagnosis he's had multiple times, and it was done by a CBS producer that also is currently dealing with cancer. So it really kind of has a kind of a deep resonance there. So if you're in that kind of stuff, you watch all the pregame things on these games, you'll have the TV on anyway. I'd recommend at least checking that out. But it'll be fun to see the Bills on because it's a different team. It feels like, you know, obviously we get the Cowboys, we get the Lions every year, but it always feels like it's like, oh, and there's the Redskins again, and there's the Broncos again. Like, it feels like these teams are on all the time.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to mix it up. All right, so the rest of the AFC playoff picture is a lot of teams that are sitting at 6-5 battling for that sixth and final wild card spot, sixth and final playoff spot, second and final wild card spot. Pittsburgh currently has it via the tiebreaker right now. They made the change to your guy, the Duck, in the second half after nearly blowing it to the winless Bengals. Actually, the Bengals almost blew it by winning a game, I should say, and the Steelers were able to hold up their end of the bargain and get it done. Mason Rudolph bench for the foreseeable future. We'll see what the Samford product, Devlin Hodges, can do the rest of the way. But there are four teams right now that are 6-5 and one team that is 5-6 that are all very much alive for this final playoff spot in the AFC. And let's run through them and say why we like or don't like them, or both, to make the playoffs, starting with your Steelers.
Yeah, the Steelers, their next four games, okay, so they have a fifth game and end the year against the Ravens. But they have the Browns, which they should win in a revenge game because of the highlighted fight with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. I think they're going to be really upset about that. They have a lot of veteran leadership. They're back in Pittsburgh as opposed to Cleveland. So I think they're going to win that game. Then they have the Cardinals who, they're just neither here nor there. And then they have the Jets and Bills. Not in that order. Bills and Jets, that is. So I think they have a pretty good chance to make the playoffs. I just don't know how their offense is going to get them there. Their offense is so bad that at the end of the day, I'm thinking somehow they blow these games close. So I don't see the Steelers making it just because it's going to be tough to do it down the stretch. But this is a true testament to how good that defense is. And Tomlin, a guy I've questioned a lot since his Super Bowl run in the beginning of his tenure, you know, he's doing a hell of a job coaching them up.
I was going to say this is one of his best coaching jobs maybe ever, and the fact that he's just kept this group together. Last year's group, very splintered, very fractured in that locker room. Now it featured a bunch of guys that were able to do that. Le'Veon Bell, who I've heard is really wasn't much of the problem. He just wasn't there. And then Antonio Brown was the problem. And then even Ben Roethlisberger, to a point, was a bit of the problem last year.
Well, you got to think, I mean, that whole saga was
just distracting.
Exhausting. Yeah. But at the same time, I think it was exhausting to Ben.
Yeah.
And Ben being in receiver in QB meetings with Antonio Brown, seeing him at practice, a lot of stuff that happened behind closed doors, I think really wore on him. And I'm not speaking for the guy or defending him because there's been reports for years that Ben Roethlisberger is kind of an asshole, you know?
Oh, no, he definitely is.
Yeah, and not kind of. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Antonio Brown's another level of crazy,
I
think that drove them nuts in the locker room.
So for what Tomlin's been able to do to keep this group together, keep them focused without much of an offense, like you said, I think the move that they made this past week had to be done. They were winning despite Mason Rudolph for the last couple of weeks, and they were in danger of losing with Mason Rudolph this week, and that means you just have to make a change. And they have turned to Hodges, who, you know, who knows what he is. He's kind of a wild card at this point. He's played very sparingly throughout the course of his very young career as a rookie. Maybe he's a spark that is just enough for them to push over the edge. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if that's the case. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they were a team on the outside looking in at the end of the day, because just like you said, that offense isn't good enough when push comes to shove.
No, they don't have enough weapons for him to where even if he is a spark, it won't mean much. They have Juju, but he hasn't been able to break free. I think it's pretty clear now that he is just a mid-level number one receiver. He really needs a good top-tier number two guy to open him up. Now, him as a number two, when he had a stud receiver like Antonio Brown to the other side of him, really opened him up and opened up the offense. So I think there's plenty of hope there for Steeler fans and the Steeler team moving forward. But as far as this year, I just don't think they're going to be able to win games because you got to score points to win games.
Next up, the 6-5 Oakland, soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh,
the
you
Raiders.
Did. Okay, okay.
There
I was
go.
Just about to say, this is the one time that we've been podcasting since August or July, even, that you didn't say the Raiders.
The Raiders.
Much better. Much
All
better.
All right. Derek Carr gets benched in last week's loss. They were really rolling in a positive way. I think they're going back to Carr. I think it was just like a temporary thing. I haven't seen any news that they're going to go long term with the disaster of a backup for them that is Mike the Neck Lennon. But for the Raiders to get back on the right track, I mean, it feels like this team also needs to almost follow a similar blueprint that the Steelers have, and that is play with kind of a tenacious defense, which they have done throughout the course of this year, but they really need Derek Carr to just not lose them games. And they're going to go they have a bye week this week, and then opening up Sunday. You already brought it up.
I know,
that
I keep
is,
calling it next
that
week.
Is, it, this but week. It, this weekend, this Sunday is December 1st. So they had the Chiefs on the road. Then they play the Titans. And then they go to the host the Jags at the Chargers, at the Broncos. So a pretty, I would say, relatively mixed bag as far as challenging teams there
call
to close
doable,
the season.
But
doable, yeah.
Yeah, but
Broncos
not.
And Jags should be wins. Chiefs, Titans. Chiefs probably a loss on the road. Titans at home, Chargers on the road. Both of those are toss-ups.
Yeah, and Chargers are returning Derwin James this upcoming Sunday, mm-hmm. and that really helps their secondary. I think the Raiders are going to continue to struggle. I think that's more of the team that they are. That's their true identity. That's really all I have to say about them because I just don't believe in Derek Carr, and I think that's going to be the issue. And their defense isn't, we just compared them to the Steelers, their defense is nowhere near as dominant as the Steelers' defense is right now. So I don't see the Raiders making a push long term to get that final wild card spot.
I like their offense better than I like the Steelers' offense. Obviously, I like the Steelers' defense better than I like the Raiders' defense. I put these teams in very similar categories. Wouldn't shock me if the Raiders end up putting together a couple of wins because they put together already more wins than I thought they would this year. 6 wins for this Raiders team coming out of training camp, I wouldn't have picked it. It felt like they were in year two of a kind of an extensive rebuild, and Carr was not part of the future plans, and he kind of played himself into the future plans over the last few weeks until last week and that loss. So big week for him, big week for the Raiders. If they're able to compete, they don't even need to win against the Chiefs, but if they're able to compete and look competent in that game, then I'll feel a lot better about their opportunity to put it together.
They need
to
look better than they looked last
week.
Yeah,
if they get blown out, then I'll be ready to stick a fork in the Raiders.
You're selling the Raiders.
Yeah. The Indianapolis Colts, 6-5 as well. And they are coming off a loss to Houston in a close contested game in Houston on Thursday Night Football this past week. The problem with the Colts right now, they just don't have a lot of weapons.
No.
Brissett is fine. The running game is good, despite the fact that Mack is out for a while now. T.Y. Hilton. Eric Ebron? Like that.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, you're naming guys assuming they're weapons, but it's like, like T.Y. Hilton is a good player, but that's another guy, in my opinion, I'd rather not have him be my number one. I'd rather him be my number two on an elite receiving core. So,
well, he just needs a complimenting guy opposite of him.
Yeah, well, that's
like
true.
He can be
the number one, but he needs...
But he needs like a big possession guy opposite
of
him or something like that.
So they signed Devin Funchess, but it never panned out.
No.
And he's not a bad player. It never worked out, though. So the Colts have the Titans, divisional rival. The Titans are rolling right now, though, so it's hard to determine what's going on there.
I don't know. Yeah. They're playing hard for the mustache.
But it's 3 wins straight now, right?
The Tanchise is all of a sudden playing himself into another contract.
I know. I love that. I love that because it won't work long term.
No.
But the Colts have the Titans, okay? Call it a win. Toss up. The Bucks should be a win.
Should be. In Tampa Bay, though, where they're frisky.
Yeah. Ugh. Man, the Bucs are just so...
They're an enigma.
Odd. Yeah, you can't figure them out.
Nope.
But then they have the Saints, should be a loss. Panthers is a toss-up because they play tough. So, you know, let's say they split those and they end the year with 8 wins. I think 8 wins could be enough to do it. So I would not be surprised. I'd feel pretty good as a Colts fan what I have in front of me. If we just take care of business, being a Colts fan, if we take care of business, we get that last wild card spot.
I look at 3 very winnable games, 1 toss-up game, and 1 probable loss the rest of the way for the Colts. And I said it at the conclusion of the game on Thursday that I think I might have actually said it on the pod last week where I said, you know, stick a fork in the AFC South. It's whoever wins this division is going 1-and-done in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they're not getting anybody else in. I now kind of like – I would lean toward the AFC South getting 2 teams in. And – This would be big if the Colts.
Yep.
But it all starts this week. Can't lose to the Titans, because then if you do, you're 6-6, and the Titans have put themselves back into the conversation at that point. And then the AFC South has gone.
Well, the Colts are also a team that they're not hard to read. I've said this from week 1, maybe, or probably week 2. They're consistent. They're solid. They're okay.
And they don't beat themselves.
Right.
Well coached.
I say that every year, but that also makes them hard to read because the teams they're playing are the actual team that's hard to read. So on the Colts' good day, they're about the same as they are in their bad day. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the Titans on their good day,
right, is better.
Could go beat the Colts' ass.
So their floor is as high as any team in the league.
Yes.
It's just they have a lower ceiling than a lot of teams.
Yep, that's exactly right. So thank you for breaking that down for our listeners.
All right, so our final 6-5 team, the aforementioned Tennessee Mayo Titans.
Yeah, Tennessee, the team that you cannot figure out. Derrick Henry, 1 week, will run possessed, and he just chooses to do it against the Jags every single year.
Only in Tennessee. But it happens in Tennessee every year.
You're right. Every year. And I feel like every year in Tennessee. And I feel like it's on repeat watching him run. He busts those long runs, and they just are the exact same thing I saw the year before when the Jags played in Tennessee. So Tennessee's schedule, we just mentioned they play the Colts. We also mentioned another team, the Raiders. So they have the Raiders. These two are both toss-ups depending on which Titans team shows up. And then the Texans, Saints, which will be a loss, and Texans again. So
that's
a
brutal three-game stretch to end the season for the Titans.
I think the Titans have to go 2-0 in the next 2 weeks, and I don't see them doing it because I think the next 2 weeks are toss-ups for them, and I definitely don't see them winning three out of the final three games.
They easily have the hardest schedule out of any of these teams we brought up because every single one of these games that they're playing – I foresee them being underdogs. At the Colts, at the Raiders, home against the Texans, they'll still be dogs. Home against the Saints, they'll still be dogs. And at the Texans, yeah, they're going to be dogs in every single one of those. And while apparently Mike Vrabel and the Texans are good at being underdogs, I just don't see them being able to put it together long term. So they're the first team that I look at this out of this 6-5, 4-team bottleneck. I would strike the Texans right now, or the Titans, excuse me.
I'm striking them too, Scott. I do want to bring up the Cleveland Browns though, being 5-6, they certainly are in striking distance of taking over that final wild card spot. And I know they have
2 in a row.
Yep, that's right. And they have the Pittsburgh Steelers this weekend in Pittsburgh, which I already told you I think is a loss because the Steelers are going to be playing possessed and angry, given how the game ended. But they then host the Bengals. That's a win. They go to the Cardinals. Should be a win.
Yep.
Lose to the Ravens because it's the Ravens.
So they're still the team that played the Ravens the toughest this year? No, the Bengals did. Never mind. Excuse me.
Steelers took them overtime, and the Ravens missed
I guess the Ravens have had a couple close calls this year, haven't they?
They've turned it on. They're a different team. So they still have the Bengals twice.
Which should be two wins automatically.
Two wins and the Cardinals. So we're looking at three almost guaranteed wins.
So that's 8 wins for the Browns.
Right.
That's a non-losing season.
So if they win this weekend against the Steelers, they pretty much are only going to lose to the Ravens if you look at, you know, just sure things. If there's a lot on the line against the Ravens, you know, it's hard to rule them out. They do have the talent. They do have the roster. I still think they lose, but, you know, it's the NFL.
It's a big weekend for the Browns. They were unquestionably the better team against the Steelers a couple of weeks ago on that Thursday night. I mean, the score doesn't indicate how badly the Browns dominated the Steelers in that game. And
because the offense for the Steelers was
just so putrid.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, with Myles Garrett out, that is a huge loss for the Browns. And obviously, there is going to be no love lost between these two as they go head-to-head. And the Steelers have a lot to play for in the fact that, obviously, they want to stay in the lead for the wild card, but they also probably want to beat the you-know-what out of the Browns this week.
That's
for
sure.
This is a big precursor for the Browns. If they win this one, and I misspoke earlier, Browns currently on a 3-game winning streak. They beat the Bills. Remember, that's one of 3 losses for the Bills this year. They beat them, beat the Steelers, and then beat the Dolphins. They will, if they get the Browns this week, or the Steelers this week, excuse me, then, yeah, you're looking at something along the lines of a 6-game winning streak for the Browns heading into that Ravens game.
Don't get ahead of yourself, though. whether you're a Browns fan or not, or just someone who
well,
likes,
if you're a Browns fan that gets ahead of themselves, then you have just not learned the lessons of being a Browns fan over
we
the years.
They just did it in the, to start this season. I mean, we had Super Bowl hype in Cleveland. Are you kidding? That what I'm saying here is on paper, schedule-wise, it looks very favorable for Cleveland. But let's just remember the team I just named.
Freddie Kitchens is the head coach.
Freddie Kitchens. It's Cleveland.
And they're the Browns.
They're the Browns. It's the Cleveland
They play in a stadium
Browns.
Built on an Indian burial ground, or most likely First Energy Stadium.
Some kind of
curse.
Because
there's just no luck there. No luck there. But regardless, this AFC picture, it's cloudy. And it probably going to stay cloudy the remainder of the season. So it should be a lot of fun to keep an eye on.
I mean, a minimum... there's 5 weeks left. Yeah, a minimum 3 weeks until we get a clear picture on maybe two
that's
teams.
Great,
oh, that's awesome. That
it
is
makes
awesome.
For makes for what should be
well,
a fun
I'll tell you, it's
conclusion
not like
to the regular
that.
Season.
It's not like that in the NFC. You have the wild
no,
card
it's
teams.
It's pretty much locked down.
The Seahawks are 9-2 in the wild card. That's a division leader every year in any conference. So,
I mean, look at this. You've got your four division leaders. You've got Seattle, the first wild card, at 9-2. You've got Minnesota, the second wild card, at 8-3. And the next team that is still alive are the 6-5 Los Angeles Rams. And the only reason they're alive is because they're on life support. I mean, this is not a group that is going to win anything. The only thing that might shift in that NFC deal, I think, is a situation in which Philly jumps Dallas. I mean, they're only game back by a game. That's the only thing I see that's any different when in that NFC picture. I think
that's
otherwise
the only
all
thing
those
that
teams
can
are
flip
the same. Yeah.
That division's the only one that can flip, because if Green Bay loses their hold on the division lead against the Vikings, both teams are still in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They just lose home field advantage.
Yeah, the Bears are very much pretenders at 5-6, in my opinion. A lot different than the landscape in the AFC, in which you've got a 5-6 team that we just made a very convincing case that they are very much alive for the playoffs still in the Cleveland Browns. And so with that, should we get into the Manzi mashup section of this podcast to conclude things?
It's one of my favorite in the newly named Manzi mashup.
Yes.
2 week old now.
Yeah, 2 week old. Let's lead off with Feast Week. And by Feast Week, I mean college basketball. It is more or less a week and a half of great college basketball. And there are tournaments all over the country. There are matchups in which you don't expect much. And, like, we are watching a college basketball game right now, which is going to overtime in Durham. Stephen F. Austin and Duke are tied at 81 as we're recording this. And Duke fans are in a stupor right now. They have no idea what is going on. Absolutely no idea what is going on as the Lumberjacks take them to OT. But this is just a regular season matchup. This doesn't even mention the Maui Invitational, the Bad Boy Motors Parrot. It's the Paradise Jam, I think, is the in the U.S. Virgin Islands. You've got the Gulf Coast Showcase. You've got the whatever they have down in Orlando now, the Tire Invitational. I mean, you've got tournaments all over the country right now pitting just about everybody against each other, and it means college basketball is on literally from like noon until about 2 a.m. every day over the course of this week. And I know this is sort of turning into a running gag, but at what level do you pay attention to college basketball over the course of this week?
God, I thought I was higher on the scale until you every week asked me, and I'm like, damn, I don't know anything. So here's the thing. I follow the rankings. I watch the Noles when they're on and when it's convenient and not conflicting with football. Unless it's a big game, of course, but we're not into divisional play yet. I know we have Tennessee coming up this weekend, who's a ranked team, and we are playing them in the aforementioned tournament. They're in the Maui tournament.
They're not in Maui, no, but I'm going to pull it up right
now.
So
there you go. There's your answer. I'm not following it very closely, okay?
Maui's already going on.
You keep throwing me under the bus here, but I'm so locked into football right now, NFL, college, all that, and it's gone. It's pretty much done. So I'm going to be flipping over here shortly. But Tennessee, I think Saturday, 7 p.m., if I remember correctly. And so there's your question, okay? Leave me alone.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's one of my favorite aspects of this time of the year. And it's just like Maui started today at 2:30, I turned on a game. I was able to work from home today. Fortunate enough to do that. By the way, the Emerald Coast Classic is what Florida State is playing in down at the arena at Northwest Florida State College in Niceville. So that's a new tournament starting this year down in the Fort Myers area on
Friday
at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, not Saturday, Friday.
Yeah, so they'll roll through Tennessee and then play the winner or loser, depending on what they do, of Purdue VCU. That's a really good field, by the way.
Yeah, no, it really is.
VCU is arguably the best mid-major team in the country right now. Purdue is Purdue, very good.
They always
Tennessee
play well.
Is a ranked opponent. I mean, this is it'll be a good challenge for the Noles, who are trying to establish themselves.
They're still figuring out their rotation. They always have a deep bench because Leonard Hamilton plays that style of ball. I'm going to just keep throwing long athletes at you.
Yeah, deep bench. He is the king of the 11-man rotation.
It's unbelievable, and I love watching it. My only thing is, the times I don't love it are in the beginning of the season because they let everyone play, and it tightens up a little as we move on. You see people's minutes diminish. But there is a player, I know his name, I feel bad saying it, but Anthony Polite, God, I can't watch that kid anymore. Talking about turnover machine as our point guard. But we've had some injuries early on, so, but no, to answer your question on a national broadcast or national landscape, I'm not doing my due diligence here on college basketball.
How about the Noles? 41-point favorites against Chicago State in the opener of the Emerald Coast Classic on Monday. They always do a on-campus game to open up these things. They covered.
Yep.
56-point win over Chicago State, who are just an embarrassment to college basketball.
Huh.
Myself, I love late-night Maui. Love late-night Maui. Last night on the way home from North Carolina, I was locked into UCLA and BYU. For much of that game yesterday watched early Maui as well. I mean, Bill Walton, love him. I mean, I know it's a very much a love-hate relationship with Bill Walton for most people. You either love him or you hate him.
He's just entertainment.
That's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. And by the way, he's not a bad analyst in the fact that he does have some nice things to say breaking down the game. But God forbid you get cookie cutter analyst number 47 coming at you with well, they have to defend the pick and roll here. No shit, Sherlock. Like, I understand basketball well enough to know that. I want some guy that's going to tell me how, you know, today I'm watching Georgia and
Michigan State.
Yep. And Anthony Edwards, who's the right now projected to go number 2 overall, the freshman guard for Georgia. His nickname's Ant. And so Bill Walton's telling me how much weight an ant can carry relative to its body weight. And Dave Pasch is giving him a hard time in the first half. In the second half, Ant goes off. Drops 33?
In the second half? Total 37.
To get his team right up to the edge of it and almost upset Michigan State. And he goes, remember when I told you how much their body weight an ant can carry? And I was like, that is such a great analogy.
It works so perfectly. Wow.
I go, this is why Bill Walton is great. But I love him. And any chance for him to sit there and just talk about how much he loves Maui is tremendous to me. And I love it. I mean, this is just a great week for sports in general. You get your NFL, you get your college, and you get your college basketball fix. You get a little bit of everything at no matter what time of the night it is.
A little NBA.
Yeah, and even NBA. And that's a great segue into our next one. Luka Doncic, he is all anybody is talking about in the NBA right now. And are you paying attention?
Oh, yeah. He's tearing it up. And I know that because the first couple games when he recorded those triple-doubles, I think it was 40-point-plus triple-double. And you'll have to check me. I think he had like 2 in a row at a point. And I caught the second one. Pull up his box score, just his stats, his last 10 games. He's been unbelievable, and I know he's obviously the way too early MVP candidate, but he certainly is. And how cool is it that we have a foreign player like this taking the NBA by storm when we have our James Hardens, our LeBron James? He is a guy that, you know, Nowitzki now retired, and we have he's another foreign player that was,
well, heck, he's got it on his team. He's got Kristaps Porzingis now
alongside. Porzingis is trash lately. I don't know.
Well,
he's coming
off the knee injury, kind of getting himself back into it. Yeah,
you're right. I'm
He was really good early in his Knicks career, and I think he's going to be fine.
He had a 15-10 tonight, but they did lose. So look at
Doncic, here we go. He goes doubled before tonight's game, Tuesday night's game against the Clippers.
This is the stretch I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, he goes 41-10 for a double-double. That's 10 assists, by the way, against the Rockets. Goes 30-14 assists against the Cavs. Then goes triple-double against the Warriors, 35-10-11. Triple-double against the Spurs before that, 42-11-12. He goes double-double, 26-15 rebounds against the Raptors. 33-10-11 for a triple-double against the Knicks. And that, so going back to the 14th of November until tonight, the 26th of November, he'd had at least a double-double in every game.
In the Warriors game on, it was last week on the 20th, he played, let's see, how many minutes? Yeah, because I knew they sat him. 26 minutes. He went 11 of 18 from the floor, 6 for 10 from 3, and that was the game that he had 35 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists, and he played basically a half the game. And they just sat him.
Unbelievable.
Oh, it was pitiful. Change the subject. And the reason I say that is I picked the Warriors plus 15.
He's fun to watch. I guess is the Slovenian is only 20 years old. He's got a weird body. He's not an Adonis out on the floor.
No.
But he gets it done, and he's one of the more fun players to watch in the NBA. And maybe is a peak in all-time NBA as far as fun players to watch across various teams. And it's nice to have somebody that's a little closer to the East Coast, since most of those guys are concentrated on the West Coast now. Makes it harder to watch some of these guys out there. So, you know, just it is what it is. Lastly, minor league baseball. There's some talk. Owners' meetings coming up. Of course, this will get brought up at the winter meetings as well. But due to some inconsistencies and invariabilities along the minor league schedule and facilities and things like that, there's talk about contraction, including a bunch of teams getting let go. This is a bad idea. You tell me why you think it's a bad idea.
Well, I think it's a bad idea. Where are all the minor league players going to go? They're just out of jobs. Who's going to sign them? And they're going to have to... I don't even know what I can say. I don't know where they'd go. I think it's a bad idea. There's a farm system for a reason. These guys are found through the farm system or brought from other countries to the farm system to prove that they can make it in the MLB.
It's definitely a bad idea. Minor league baseball is at an all-time high right now in popularity. I don't want to call it a renaissance, but it's a situation in which, due to marketing efforts, rebranding of teams, just investment from parent clubs and owners of these respective teams into the infrastructure and the night in, night out, what it looks like as far as entertainment and things of the like, the stadiums and all that. I mean, it's minor league baseball has never been more popular in America, and to cut it down right now would be downright irresponsible. There's a big reason why minor league baseball is popular, and it's not just because they have wacky bobblehead nights and crazy apparel. It's because it's affordable family fun, and I know that's the tagline of the shrimp, but it's true. I mean, think about in the summertime, especially around here in Jacksonville, and the shrimp are fortunately not one of the teams on the chopping block in this scenario, but think about in the summertime when there's not a whole lot going on in sports. You have time off or more relaxed time. There's a lack of holidays. There's kids on vacation. You're looking at as a family of things to do. Well, you can get tickets for $5. You can get hot dogs for $2. It's parking's $5. Tickets, I mean, I already said it, are $5. I mean, it's a night of full family entertainment that is relatively cheap, and then for those that don't have families that still like to just go to the ballpark and imbibe a few, you've got all sort of discount beer night. I mean, it's low-level sports, but it's high-level entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'd be a shame to watch it leave. And like you said, the rebranding they've done recently has made them more popular and exciting. And the main thing is these goofy little names that we have. And these,
right?
The Akron Rubber Ducks and the Jumbo Shrimp and you name it. I mean, the same owner, but you know.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the Binghamton Rumble Ponies and the New Orleans Baby Cakes and all these other weird ones. But
exactly. I mean, it'd be a shame to see it go.
Well, that is it for this episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. Coming out a day late this week. Thanks for bearing with my travel schedule. Again, stay tuned because tomorrow, Thanksgiving, you will hear, have the chance to hear, our special rivalry weekend edition of the podcast. We have a couple guests on, talking football, and a chance to really do, we get in depth and we have a lot of fun with it, and we hope that you'll have some fun with it as well as we really break down what should be a phenomenal week of college football here this weekend, and whether or not these, I mean, there's some really good matchups. There are some matchups that are traditionally good on paper that we poke a little fun at and the like. So that is coming on Thursday morning, Thanksgiving morning, and also. Is that a buzzer beater? Oh,
holy
my goodness.
Shit.
Did he get it off in time?
Yes, he
Stephen
did.
Stephen F. Austin may have just upset number one Duke in overtime.
On
and this is
a
bad
fast
radio.
Break
on
layup.
A fast break steal layup. Oh, I should have broken into play-by-play mode in that moment. I'm sorry.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
Wow.
Holy shit.
That's why
shit.
I'm saying Feast Week's good. Right there, Alex.
Feast Week, baby.
Yeah.
I'm locked in. I'm locked in now. Next week, ask me anything college basketball. I'll know it all. I'm ready.
They're definitely going to go to the monitor to review this one, but
let's
we'll
see.
Hold
on.
Okay,
hang
here
with
we
us.
Go. Here we go. Here we go.
I'll
three,
tell
eight,
you.
Seven, six, five, four, three.
Ball's
two.
Out. Ball's
Ball
out.
Is out. That is a winner for the Lumberjacks of Stephen F. Austin over the number one team in the country, the Duke Blue Devils. And with that, we will officially wrap this week's episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. Again, stay tuned. Two episodes this week coming up. For Alex, I'm Scott. This has been another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.